Hello, and thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Billy Newman Photo Podcast. I wanted to talk to you for a couple seconds today about the new IGTV and the new IGTV app. That's Instagram television, I suppose. I suppose you break it out to all of that. But it's a trip. It's weird. I'm not used to it yet. It's vertical video first. I know Snapchat did that. I know Stories does that. But this is sort of calling it out a little bit to edit video, to produce video in this vertical format. It's sort of naming itself as a competitor to YouTube at the moment, but I'm sort of interested to see how that'll play out. I think it's maybe a little bit more of a competitor to a Snapchat system. It seems like that, or maybe even Patreon. It seems like it's trying to pull creators and sort of insert some monetization system that you can throw in there, but I'm interested to see how it all turned out. I've been trying to mess around with it. I'm always excited for new systems of, you know, kind of publishing content and media. And so I was trying to use my Instagram account at Billy Newman, if you're interested, to put up a handful of vertical videos that I'm editing together. And so what I've been doing is I've been throwing it together in Final Cut, and I made a special project. Final Cut new project, and then I set the pixel layout to custom. So instead of 1920 by 1080, you know, a horizontal layout of an HD video, I went in and I set it to custom and I made it 1080 to 1920, which throws that to an HD vertical video. And so once I did that, the frame of the video is vertical. Now, what I did is I had all these horizontal videos that I had in my browser. I dropped those onto the project timeline and it shows them. What would that be? There's pillar boxed and sandbox or crop title boxed. I don't know what it is. It's like title box or something. It's, you know, just two big things over the top. But again, it's vertical with like a little band in the middle of it. So what I have to do is you have to conform that video. You have to transform it, stretch it out so that it fills the screen in a way. So you use a transform tool. You stretch the video out by holding the command key so that it scales the video out nicely, and then it shows it vertically. Then you have to clip it and orient it so that the kind of like pan and scan back in the 50s, you know, when they were trying to transition widescreen movies to TV, you had a pan and scan. And so that means you have to reorient the position of focus on the subject, right? So does that make sense? So once I switch it to vertical video, it pans out the subject of the video that I was pointed out. You know, let's say there was something really cool in the left-hand corner of the video and something really cool in the right-hand corner of the video, and that was the frame that you had. Well, now, in this vertical video, it's just showing you nothing that's in the center of it. It's not showing you the cool thing on the right or the left. So you have to choose. So you have to clip it, you know, cut it with the blade, and then you have to transform what's shown to one of those cool points of interest that you were shown in the video. And then you have to kind of manipulate, clip around it a little bit. It's still sort of a kludgy thing, but it was fun to get through. I made a couple of clips of videos and stuff. I made a clip of a podcast. I threw it up there. There's like a 10-minute limit right now. And then I think there's maybe a 60-minute limit once you're over, say, like 10,000 followers and you have a business account. I don't know. That's the thing, though. Is anybody really using Instagram to watch 60 minutes of video? Maybe not me, but here's the thing I've learned is I underestimate how much people are on Instagram, it turns out. So maybe that's why Instagram has enough data to try and put together a whole app as a vision to compete with YouTube and Snapchat. Something kind of interesting, but definitely check out some Instagram TV bits and pieces. I guess there's content out there. Probably something cool to see.
You can see more of my work at billynewmanphoto.com. You can check out some of my photo books on Amazon. I think you can look up Billy Newman under the authors section there and see some of the photo books on film, on the desert, on surrealism, on camping. Some cool stuff over there.
How's it going? Thanks a lot for tuning in to this episode. I'm camping up on some national forest land right now, up on Cold Creek in an area kind of outside of where I'm living in Oregon, and it's going pretty well. We're having a good day. I'm just here by myself, so I'm doing a solo camping trip. It's the first solo night out I've done this year, and I'm excited to be doing it. I think it's going to be kind of cool. It's been fun so far, too. It's been pretty mellow. I'm out here at my campsite. I got my recording gear kind of rigged up, and I'm at the tailgate of my truck. I made a fire earlier in the fire ring, and it's a pretty clear night, pretty mellow weather. Seems kind of cold up here. It's sort of the mountains, and I think it's close-ish to the snow level, but still a few, it's still a bit above me. I drove up to it earlier, so earlier when I was coming in, I left at about noon today, and I took off and drove out of town up into the forest, and then up kind of on this meandering Forest Service road. And you'd think right now that, you know, maybe a lot of stuff would be empty or you know, not in a lot of use. But really, when I got out here, I noticed a good bit of traffic. It's a nice day. It's May. It's May 6th. So I bet people are kind of getting out and just kind of given the environment that we're in right now where people don't get to, or, you know, that are just kind of stuck at home or they're not at work or something. They're probably for the first time, you know, a lot of free time for a lot of these people too. So it seems like this area out here, as soon as I got to the region that you could camp, it was full of campers. I was noticing that when I was coming up. So there's an area where I think you have to go in 17 miles up the road before you hit the area where you can begin just camping on the side of the road. And I think that's probably the spot where the national forest land begins. And before that, I think you're in a region of BLM land that's structured out below there as you get kind of closer down toward the highway. And so this further out, made it through the BLM land. That's, I guess, says no camping. I think you can do like a lot of day use area stuff out there. A couple campgrounds I passed, just sort of like Forest Service campgrounds or BLM campgrounds, but sort of a more organized pull out with the bathroom. Those were closed. Or, you know, there was like, I think one of them, at least I saw the picnic area had remained open for day use stuff. But, that, you know, you just kind of walk down to the river or something. But there was a number of people out by the lake earlier down at the area I was, lower down on the mountainside. And then as I kind of had come up here into the hills, most of this road had been paved. So it's a pretty commonly used road. And I think it goes pretty well. I think it goes all the way through. So if it were clear, you could get from here or from the side that I was on, I guess it would be kind of the southwest side to the northeast side of the corner of the forest and kind of pop out on the other side of the highway. And when I was driving through earlier, I'd gone just a bit further than where I am now. And I traveled uphill a bit more and it kind of started getting windy. And then I started noticing a little bit of snow in the shadier spots, the north facing slopes and stuff. And then after a little bit further, God, it was pretty crazy. It was you know, probably a couple, I don't know, it must have been a couple hundred downed trees that had come down through the road. And so the truck had come through so far and just cut out a small route. You know, it just cut out maybe 8 feet of the tree there so you could get a vehicle through. It must have been more than that, but it was just enough to kind of squeeze a truck through. But really the posts of the logs are still just kind of sticking out, strewn across like toothpicks. What was that, like, pick-up sticks game that you could play? It was kind of like that when they were just kind of, like, all stack up on each other. But, yeah, they're just kind of laid out over each other all the way up this road. And I had to go over or go under a couple low bridges, too, you know, where you kind of have to, like, skirt around to the side. That, you know, the tree was still just hung all the way across the road. It hadn't been cut down. I think it was too high. I'm not even sure if it was a Forest Service truck that did some of this. It seems like it must have been given the effort. But it just seems like they just started or they haven't really got around to finishing the work. I don't know. Maybe the snow had just melted up at that high of an elevation. But as I had gotten just a little bit further up the way, I saw like the road was just packed out in snow. And there was a couple tire tracks that had gone in about 4 feet and then backed out and twisted around and then I guess come back the other way. So it seemed like I had seen a couple cars come from that way. And I guess they had just turned around before I did, you know. But it was good. I traveled all the way up there and checked out a couple spots. Oh man, it was there was a spot where there's this man. I would hate to have to be the person or the engineering crew that was putting in bridges out in these really rural areas. I look at some of these engineering projects, you know, just like steep cliff sides, really, and then they have to reinforce this wall, and then build like a bridge out over it too. But there's this area that I was passing in, it must have been a couple years ago or whenever it was, but they built a new bridge since, but the old bridge, the bridge that used to be there for years, I guess had been washed out in a snowstorm or a flood out. And it's only, you know, 100 yards down the creek way there. And you just see this giant, well, not giant, you know, a very large, probably 75-foot bridge structure that was supposed to cut you across this creek. Is just kind of laying out over the rocks downriver. And you go, whoa, hey, there's a bridge that was washed out over there. So
It's a trip. I've seen a few of those things out here in some of these spots of the, you know, just the rural areas where things get washed out and it takes a couple years for them to kind of reestablish whatever it was over there. So I don't know, but it was cool. I took a couple photos of it. I've been trying to take some photos of this creek area here, and it's cool. There's a lot of nice river rock and stuff at the base of it, and a lot of fresh snow melt too. So the water looks really, really green, or, you know, just kind of that pure kind of emerald and aqua blue look that you can get to some of this mountain water that's up here in the Cascades. Really pretty, really fresh, really crisp kind of area. I noticed though, this region, as opposed to others, is maybe a little drier in its kind of forested climate. How is that? See, I'm in the area that should be pretty mossy and stuff, so maybe I'm not sure what I'm talking about. It's interesting how there's just different regions of the environment as you kind of go through areas of Oregon. But even though this is a pretty forested area, some of these areas real near here are real lush and wet, and or they just have, you know, kind of a lot going on in that manner. This is really a little bit more arid of an area, but it's a nice forest area. It's a big area too. I think just a ways up, there's a wilderness area and a couple trailheads. That'd be cool, but I bet they're kind of snowed in now given the elevations. So we'll see if all my plans come together. But as it was, for the most part, it was to travel out and to try and get some photo stuff done, some photo work. And I'm trying to do more on the side of, you know, just kind of like creating stuff that I'm really interested, or, you know, like the photos that I really want to get to. I'm going to try and put those together and then kind of put those out as, you know, little publishing pieces and stuff here and there. But you can check out more information at BillyNewmanPhoto.com. You can go to BillyNewmanPhoto.com/support if you want to help me out and participate in the value for value model that we're running this podcast with. If you receive some value out of some of the stuff that I was talking about, you're welcome to help me out and send some value my way through the portal at BillyNewmanPhoto.com/support. You can also find more information there about Patreon and the way that I use it. If you're interested or feel more comfortable using Patreon, that's patreon.com/BillyNewmanPhoto. For the longest time, I was shooting with Nikon cameras, and I'd always really liked doing that, but most of that was always kind of maybe constrained by budget. I think I started with a Nikon D40 back in, you know, 2007 is when I bought it. The camera probably came out earlier than that. I really enjoyed kind of picking up, and that was like an entry-level DSLR at the time, and now it's like really antiquated. I sold that off now years ago and kind of moved it over into other camera equipment over time. But that's what I got while I was in college. It was a really good camera for me to learn on and kind of learn some of the fundamentals of working with a digital camera. And I had a lot of fun working with that. I made like a ton of photographs with it. Then pretty soon after that, I tried to switch over to something that was more of a professional body when I was trying to take some of the work that I was doing a little more seriously, and when I was trying to get hired as a photographer to do really even just student projects. At the time, I was trying to get a couple extra lenses, and I was trying to get a couple stronger features in the camera body that I was using. So at the time, I think it was in like 2008, 2009, actually. I think it was in 2009, I'd bought my first like professional body, the Nikon D2H. And at that time, that was already a pretty antiquated camera. I think in 2009, it probably came out in 2003, I think is what it was. So that's already like a pretty big gap in time there. And there's been, you know, at that time, especially in that decade, there was just so much advancement in the way that sensors worked and the way that the CM, or it wasn't even a CMOS, it was like an ELBCAST. It was like an LBCAST named sensor. I don't even know what that is, but it was different than the CMOS system that would be in a lot of cameras, I think, that maybe we'd probably find now, or, you know, like the sensor piece in the back. And it wasn't full frame either. It was in even the professional line, it wasn't full frame. It was still like that crop sensor that Nikon had. So it was good for a long time, and I was really happy to use it and happy to kind of learn on that camera. It had a ton of features, and really I'd probably go back to that full professional body of Nikon if I was just to pick any camera that I wanted to use. I think like a Nikon D5 would be an amazing camera to work with. But at the time, what I was trying to do was get a job at a newspaper, like the student newspaper, when I was going to college, and to try and get some jobs, and or you know, trying to get some activity to try and go and take different photographs in different locations. And that job was great. It was cool working for the student newspaper because you get to go to different locations and try and make some interesting photo out of something that's probably not very interesting. It's normally like a person talking to a classroom with beige walls and low level ceiling light or something like that. Every once in a while you get to go to a football game or something like that, something that you don't really have the opportunity to go to normally. And that was really fun. That was interesting, and it provided me a lot of opportunities to do some different, or you know, work with different lenses, work with different lighting and some sort of interesting and dynamic subject matter. But a lot of the time, like I'm mentioning, it was like I think I had to go photograph that they were removing pipes from a student building on some side of campus I hadn't been to before. So I was supposed to take a photograph of the absence of pipes. It didn't really make a lot of sense. It wasn't really a very interesting photo, and there was no people or story around it. So it's always something like that, or it seemed to be often something like that, that was just like had almost no subject to take a photograph of. So it was a challenge in that way, but it was really fun when you got to do something cool. So that's why I bought that Nikon D2H. And then to accompany that, I think I tried to save up some money in college. That was hard for me to do. I tried to save up, I think, like $150 or something like that to buy the 50mm 1.8 lens. That was like, I don't know, the version of Nifty 50 that they have over on the Nikon side. It was great to use. And that kit there, that the D2H and the 50mm was what I used to take a bunch of photographs for the next many years. It's a great kit of a camera to have, and it worked really well to I think like a bunch of the cool landscape stuff that I did on the first couple trips I did were just both with that setup. So I bought that Nikon D2H used on eBay when I made that purchase of it. And I used that camera probably for the longest amount of time. Like, I think I used that up until like around 2013 or so, when I was kind of trying to shift away from it. And that's when I was getting into more film photography stuff. At that time, I switched over to just a different camera, a Nikon N80 film camera, because I was doing a ton of stuff with film and film rolls at the time. And then I bought a Nikon F4S, another film body camera that was from like the 90s, I think, is when that one was manufactured. I think it first came out in like 1988, that I probably mentioned a couple times.
Thanks a lot for checking out this episode of the Billy Newman Photo Podcast. Hope you guys check out some stuff on BillyNewmanPhoto.com. A few new things up there, some stuff on the homepage, some good links to other outbound sources, some links to books, some links to some podcasts, links to some blog posts. All pretty cool. But yeah, check it out at BillyNewmanPhoto.com. Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of the podcast. Talk to you next time.